Welcome to the Hollywood Outsider, an award-winning weekly entertainment podcast. In this episode, our topic is movies and TV shows that we're thankful for. Also, the SAG strike is over. We're thankful for that, too. Reviews of Next Goal wins, and we're going to talk about the Marvels and much more. So let's get on with the show. My name is Aaron Peterson. Joining me today, my fellow host, John Davenport.
Hey, buddy. How you doing today?
Doing wonderful. Troy Heinrichs.
This is a soccer show.
What?
Go! Go! No, just kidding.
I don't know what the hell just happened, but
He just tried to do the Spanish soccer announcer who's like, go!
You've caused three car accidents, at least, minimum.
You're culpable.
I'm not culpable of anything. I don't even watch soccer unless it's Ted Lasso.
And it was barely Ted Lasso because it took you a while to even get into that.
That's true. Remember, you can always find more information at thehollywoodoutsider.com. Join our Facebook group or on Twitter at @BuyPopcorn. Share your thoughts on this episode, on our social media. So, hey, what's up, guys? The SAG strike is finally over. It's being ratified. There's, I guess, a chance. I think Justine Bateman was trying to throw a wrench in this program, but so far it seems like it's going to go through.
Well, she needed to get caught up on Game of Thrones.
Yeah. I was going to say, when was the last time Justine was relevant?
Damn. Oh, way to make her feel slighted. Okay. She did a wonderful movie a couple years ago, so there's that.
You going to name drop it, or are you just going to say that?
Violet. It's got Olivia Munn. I was having a brain freeze. I'm like, what was the name of it? No, it's Violet. It's a great movie. Great movie. Nobody saw it, but great movie. I saw it.
Add it to the list.
Yeah, I'll add it to your list. I'm sure you'll get right on it. You're so good at that. You know you lost a bet, by the way.
I know. I lost two.
We had a bet that Taylor Swift's movie wouldn't make over $350 million domestic. You're insane to think that it would. And I said, no chance. It's going to final under $200 million. So I'm just saying, you now have to watch a movie of my choosing at some point, unless you want to be a welcher.
I mean, Violet sounds good. I'll pop it in.
No, I didn't pick a movie yet. No, nope. You don't get to choose the movie. I get to choose the movie. It's going to be punishment. It's not going to be enjoyable. I'm not going to do enjoyable. If you want a great movie about an inner monologue, Violet's your movie. If you want to be punished, it's going to be something else.
It's going to be like The Bed That Eats or something.
I hope so. The Bed That Eats People.
Yeah.
Annihilation.
Velocipaster.
Velocipaster.
Oh, hey, awesome. No, you watch your mouth.
That's too enjoyable. We got to find something else. I'll figure it out. I'll figure something out. Or maybe I'll pick one where you get to learn a lesson.
Sure. It's a silent film.
Oh, God, that would be punishment. That would be punishment. And then I'll quiz you on it to see if you actually watch the whole damn thing.
Be like there the pastor's go. Wife or something.
No, there's some. The Lodger is a great silent movie if you've never seen that. So there are good ones, so I won't put that one on the list.
It is your choice.
Mm-hmm. So you're saying you're not going to welch?
No, it's a lot easier to watch a 90 to a 180 minute movie than it is to watch 10 hours of TV.
Still didn't answer me. John, did you hear that? He didn't quite answer me.
Nope, he didn't quite answer that.
Yeah.
He said I wouldn't welch on this one. I'm still watching Justified. It's just slow.
Make sure you pick one that's on a service where he can't watch it at 2x speed.
Punish him even further.
That's on all of them.
You have to watch it at normal speed. No! The Vader no comes flying out of him.
Right. What about Padme? No.
God, I hate that scene. That's so bad. Well, hey, you know what? Thankfully, we're going to get more scenes like that because the SAG-AFTRA strike is over here, so actors can get back to work. Yay! Here are the basics of what they got, just real quick. So a minimum 7% pay increase this year, followed by 4% and then 3.5% compounded next years. Significant AI protections, including consent to use your previous likeness in covered work or additional work. Fair pay for such. Performers receive pay for time that their scans are created and other attributes. Consent required to digitally alter performance unless it remains substantially as scripted. establishes very loose terms around the concept of synthetic performers, which means, you know, AI-created performers. If a show or a film was in the top 20% of all products, performers receive a streaming bonus, what used to be called residuals. There are additional residuals and streaming compensation built in, additional background actor compensation, and there's several other key items. So those are the big ones. You know, I've been hearing about the strike for 4 months now. Entertainment news suddenly started coming out, which was awesome. You know, I felt like, we're live again. But what do you think about this?
So the writers go on strike, then the actors go on strike, kind of like as a team. And we get the third bullet, I think you mentioned, which was consent required to digitally alter a performance unless it remains substantially as scripted. So as a writer, I can go in there and say, this scene requires Harrison Ford to look like he's 20. And then therefore Harrison Ford can't actually do anything to say no, because it was substantially done that way as scripted. If that's the way I'm understanding that part of the contract.
Well, yeah, if it's part of the script, then it's demonstrated in the script that it would be necessary. Then consent wouldn't be needed, because once you sign on, you're agreeing to the terms. It's what they're trying to get to, I believe, is the ability of the studio after the fact to go change your voice or change your appearance without your prior approval.
Right.
Yeah.
Which is really how it should have been written in. Should have been like, after it's done, you can't go mess with it.
And maybe it is. And, you know, it's all legalese, so it's a summary. But
totally.
Yeah.
But yeah, corporate America, if you're listening, these are big studios that make lots of money. I'd like a 7% pay increase this year, followed by a 4%, and then back to the standard 3.5. Hell, I didn't even get 3.5 last year.
It's pretty hard to get Joe Average on board with this, right?
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally. I mean, I get that they've probably been behind the eight ball for a while, so the initial 7%
makes... So are most companies in the country.
Don't disagree with that. Mm-hmm. Just saying. But yeah, I mean, we definitely have to think about what does it mean for... Why is there a pay increase even required for Hollywood, other than there should be a whatever standard cost of... If it costs that much, X percentage more to make more movies... then it should be raises go up by that same X percentage, right? If it's, you know, lumber costs more and transportation costs more and food costs more or whatever, you know, then whatever that cost more is, it should be the raise.
Well, right? Services cost more and they're essentially providing a service. So
exactly. But I mean, I think the bigger part of this should have been more on the bonus side than in the actual salary side. But that's just me, right? Because again, I'm looking at it going like, I don't get 3.5%.
I don't know their specific situation, so I'm sure you got to keep in mind actors, it's a very different position and profession, because oftentimes the majority of actors have breaks between jobs. You know, they have long breaks, so they make a little extra money to kind of hold them over between jobs. And sometimes it can be a while between jobs, especially a struggling actor, which are most actors. So, you know, they seem overwhelmingly happy, positive about it. I think that's a win for the guild and the actors themselves.
Yeah, and they got what they needed, which was the streaming information, right? The top 20%, you get a bonus, you get additional residuals. That's really what this was about. It wasn't about the AI and all that stuff. That was kind of like the nothing burger.
I don't think it was a nothing burger. I think it was a bigger deal than it maybe either should have been or than we thought it would be, but I wouldn't call it a nothing burger. I would say it's significant.
It's there, but I mean, I think the significantness of this was literally about the streaming.
Yeah.
Because the streaming services took off out of nowhere. The writers were upset about the streaming. The actors were upset about the streaming because reruns go away. That's called repeats in some places.
It's a 3-year contract. I feel like they're going to revisit all of this in 3 years.
For sure.
And AI definitely will be advanced at that point, and they're going to be looking at it again.
And I think that's fair, too. Like, it should be a shorter time period for these things to be reviewed. It shouldn't be this is a 10-year deal. You know, it should be reviewed on a regular basis.
All right. I think we covered it. Look, I don't want to go in a 45-minute conversation about this. I feel like we've been talking about it for months. So I'm glad that the union resolved this. I hope they get ratified. If there's any hiccups, disregard everything you just heard. But I'm fairly certain this is going to go through because they want to get back to work. So on to more serious matters. A police officer in Australia, Constable Dominic Francis Gaynor, pled guilty to carrying a firearm with disregard for the safety of his colleague because in 2022, it's an old case, but all this just happened. Gaynor pointed his gun at a fellow officer after that officer had seen Top Gun Maverick the night before, and Gaynor said, and I quote, "Don't spoil the movie, C word. I'll shoot you." Spoilers matter, people.
This is a pretty great story. This
also horrible. Let's be clear. All right,
well, nobody died. Okay. I mean,
all right, all right. Go ahead.
Nobody died. You know, that's the good news. And you know, this is Australia, so they have a lot more stricter rules about guns than we do. So if this was done in the States, it wouldn't even have made it to be a story. Oh, somebody pulled a gun on you? Pfft, whatever. And they would have like moved on.
It'd be a TikTok.
Right. Hey, yeah. You know, so this is a pretty great deal. I almost want to pay like the cops legal fees on this one, just because I get it when I've had so many people sit there. I almost
want to pay the cops legal fees. That's messed up. All right. Sorry.
Well, you know, I've had conversations with people where it's like, I haven't seen that movie. Well, can I tell you about it? No, I haven't seen the movie. I'm planning on going to see it. But let me just tell you about this one spot. Ooh. I'm going to see the movie, but I have to tell you about this one spot. Okay, fine. Go ahead. It can't be that big of a deal.
So you've talked to Troy.
Right.
He does it to me all the time. Like, don't tell me anything. I'm just going to tell you this one thing. It's not a spoiler. And then I'm like, I didn't know that thing was going to be a thing. That's a spoiler.
Right. We totally like Avengers Age of Ultron when they did the trailer with the Hulkbuster costume in there. I'm like, all right, that's, if Troy would have done that to me, I would have shot him in the face.
Metaphorically.
I think you'd shoot me in the face for a lot less.
Metaphorically.
Metaphorically.
You can't even say the word. It's metaphorically.
No, I can't.
Metaphor and what?
Where do we stand on this? Like in this day and age, you know, I can't even go on social media or anything. If there's anything I really want protected, I have to like condition myself now to not go to certain places, because I know there'll be an article with a picture that'll say, who can believe this character died? And then I have a picture of the character. Like, we can't figure that out.
Oh, right.
You know, yeah. And then you read the article. Oh, spoilers ahead. No, spoilers before.
Spoilers in the picture, in the subject line.
Yeah. I mean, it's getting really, really difficult. So you either have to start conditioning yourself to be okay with spoilers, which isn't fair, or stay off social media, which also probably isn't fair.
But probably healthier.
Also probably healthier. Hey, John and I agreed on something.
Yeah, a little bit. You know, it's probably healthier to stay off social media, but there's a lot of times where I find that if there's a movie coming up that I really want to see, I start unplugging from certain things for sure, because it's going to happen. It's going to be a news article, or it's going to be something somebody posts in the Facebook group or on Facebook or on Instagram or something else. Or I'll start picking up on it because all of a sudden all these artists that I follow are drawing a specific thing from a specific movie. And even though the trailers had nothing to do with it, you can almost just go, oh, well, that makes sense.
I could totally see cops here doing this, and like as a joke, but it's just, you can't point your gun at someone, man. You can't do it, even if it's spoilers. And you know, I get it, spoilers suck. That's not cool. I don't know how you spoil a Top Gun Maverick, but they won. Shh, in case anybody's listening and haven't seen it yet.
Maybe said something about tying into Star Wars.
What? You tie everything into Star Wars. How does this tie into Star Wars?
Top Gun Maverick totally is Star Wars episode 4.
Oh, yeah. All right. For once, you actually have a real connection.
I mean, the big thing is, I mean, not that you should point your gun at anybody, but
you shouldn't, unless you're defending yourself in some manner.
Well, what the article never actually explained was whether or not the gun was even loaded in the first place.
True. But if they're police officers, I would imagine it was. Otherwise, well, I guess if you're an officer of the law, it probably shouldn't matter, right? Loaded or unloaded, don't point it at anyone.
Right. You know, was he in the station? Was he still getting his ammunition for the day? Was it while they were just, you know, turning their guns in at the end of the night? Like, there's a lot of the story that's missing in the article.
But it really depends on the situation, right? Because if you're like, you and your buddy are talking about 7 and you haven't seen it, and your buddy's like, oh, man, I can't believe her head was in the box. I get it. You know what I mean? I get it.
Is that what that joke meant?
No, more of the story. Guns aren't toys.
Thanks, Dad. Appreciate that. More important moral of the story, don't spoil movies for anyone. It's never cool. You're never a cool person by doing that. You're always the jerk when you do that. Always. Without fail.
I was already a jerk, so that's why I just keep doing it to you.
No, you don't do it like the direct one. You do that subtle spoiler thing, which I can't decide if it's worth. You're like, oh man, just wait until about 14.6 minutes in. That's when a big thing happens. That's the kind of spoilers that Troy gives. He doesn't say so-and-so, you know, he doesn't say Bruce Willis is dead the whole time. He doesn't say that. He's like, man, at 1 hour and 52 minutes, when you find out what happened to Bruce Willis's character, that's the kind of spoiler Troy gives.
Try to pump it up. Give you the...
So the whole time... No, when you say that, like, there's this big thing that happens, and then I'm just waiting for the thing. The whole time, all I have in my mind is like, what's the thing? And I'm watching everything going, is it going to tell me what the thing is? Oh, that's what... Okay, now I think I know what the thing is. It's just more disappointment.
Well, with Troy, sometimes you find out that the big thing is only big to Troy.
That's
true. Also true. Yeah, it's also true.
There's this amazing thing that happens right there in 14 minutes in, and it's going to be great. You're going to love every single second. All I saw him do is pour some tea into a cup. Yeah, that's it. That was it. That was so good.
Did you see the meaning? The meaning in the tea?
Yeah.
Didn't you see that? The whirlpool?
Yeah, this. It was going the wrong way.
Would you see the symbol in the froth and the coffee? That was the Westworld symbol.
That's how the Barbie movie is totally Westworld. What are you doing to me right now?
Oh wait, I could see that actually.
It totally was.
I know. Yeah,
I
picked the wrong two movies.
You could totally
the wrong two properties.
Work. Now that I think about it, God, maybe it is an extension. Maybe that's the conclusion. That's what happens when Dolores went back in. Yep. She ended up in Barbie Land.
Oh. Totally.
She was Barbie Hammer.
Barbie Hammer? Whatever. You mean Heimer?
Heimer.
Heimer, Heimer. I've heard it both ways.
No, you haven't.
No, I haven't, but still.
You have not. Ah, well, speaking of dumb, you can bring home the wildly hilarious movie Dumb Money. Dumb Money about a group.
Hey, wait a minute.
Hey, this is important news. Be quiet. If you want to bring home the wildly hilarious movie Dumb Money about a group of everyday people who flipped the script on Wall Street and got rich doing it, it's certified fresh on Rotten Tomatoes with critics calling it massively entertaining and not to be missed. Dumb Money is available right now to buy on digital. It's rated R. It's available wherever you go. Hashtag GameStop. You know what I mean? And if you want a chance to win a digital copy, email us. contests@thehollywoodoutsider.com. That's contests@thehollywoodoutsider.com with the subject Money for Nothing, your name, and tell us your favorite topic this year. I want to see your investment. You'll be entered, and we will randomly pick five winners to win a digital code of Dumb Money. Great story. It's a great story.
Hey, you know what? People got rich. It's all that matters.
Absolutely. All about it. All right. Well, let's go to our From the Outset In topic. We're going to put reviews last because we want to talk about Marvels in spoilery fashion when we get there. So let's go to our From the Outset In topic. John, are you mad because I implied that that was a dumb take?
No, I'm not mad.
That's good. That's good.
I mean, you're right. It was probably a pretty dumb take, but I'm not mad.
All right. So our topic.
You took one for the show. You took one for the show.
Oh, it's usually if it's not you, it's me. So I'm glad it just wasn't you this time.
Well, Amanda's not here. We can just make fun of her.
Yeah. I mean, if anyone's taking anything, it's always Amanda.
Oh, wow. And moving on.
I love you, Amanda.
What movies or TV shows are you most thankful for? Now, what I mean by that is that they truly represent like a part of your own character or give you some emotional response that you carry with you to this day. And why? You know, we're in that time where everybody's thankful for something. Like, what are the movies that you really... And TV shows that you're really thankful for. They give you a piece of peace or joy, or they're just part of who you are.
I'll throw a one that might be newer to the current times. Mm-hmm. And I think that's going to be A Million Little Things.
For you?
Yeah. A Million Little Things for me, the 5 years, five seasons it was on, just watching those people and the friendships and how they went through a, you know, tragedy with one of their friends passing away and how they all kind of came together, become this like tight-knit group of people. You could almost call them a family together. We were actually going through something very similarly like that with a group of my friends over the last 2 years. So it was just kind of having like this like reminder of, you know, your family isn't who you were born into. Your family are the people that you choose to hang around with on a regular basis, much like all of you, the listeners, you know, our extended families of ours in this case.
That's, I think, pretty sweet.
You know, that's probably, and I resonated with the Gary character a lot. I'm hoping it doesn't turn out the way Gary's character turns out. But
speaking of spoilers,
that's pretty
what
much
happens to Gary.
See the show.
Shh. Watch the show. Shh. Gotta watch the show.
Watch the show.
No, I don't. Who's Gary?
Just his, like, his ability to be like a father to the kids whose father passed away in the pilot episode. His ability to be, you know, this person who's taking care of another human being and how they come together, and then just how he'll basically go to the ends of the earth for someone and even risk going to jail himself, you know, for a certain situation. It just, you know, I resonate with that character a lot, and it helped me get through that time of having my own friend pass away. And it just was like, I could see this in my own people. So I'm super appreciative for that particular show at the time it happened.
All right, let's go a little round robin. That way we don't have to cut each other off. That's good. What about you, John?
I mean, there's so many things that I have to be thankful for in the way.
That's why we go round robin. We go one at a time.
Oh, I can't just spill everything all at once?
No, because we'll be here for 10 minutes just listening to your monologue.
Well, so I can't like do a movie and a television show?
Can you do one at a time?
I mean, in the same moment?
Can you just do, are they connected?
No.
Can they just be one at a time?
I mean,
why is this so difficult for you?
If I use Troy's logic, I can make them connected.
I'm thankful for subtlety. And succinctness.
So
if the thematic thing is tied into the two, then it makes sense. If
right.
If the thematic thing that's not tied into the two, then it doesn't make sense.
Right. Watch me.
Then keep them separate.
They're just bogarting the conversation because you want to talk longer.
Right. So watch me connect Supernatural and How I Met Your Mother. So
Jesus.
No. you know, as far as like recent things that I'm thankful for, I'm thankful for stuff like Reacher recently. It's been something that I really enjoyed. And since it's coming out, I've probably watched the season over and over again about 15 different times. It's something that I find comforting. Something that I enjoy as much as I enjoy Reacher, I enjoy the other characters almost more than I do Reacher himself. And there's just something about the show that really speaks to me. So that's something that I've been able to kind of retreat into and enjoy on a pretty regular basis. And just like that world.
Did you read the books at all?
I've read one of the books.
Because I'm with you on the whole character as a whole. I mean, I think the first Jack Reacher movie is fantastic. Second one, less or so, wasn't so much a Jack Reacher tale as it was a Tom Cruise movie.
Right.
The series, fantastic. Alan Rickman's, he just nails the character. And really, I'm with you 100%. I've seen it multiple times. I love the character. I've read many of the books. A lot of that has to do with, he's just a character who just, right is always right. Doesn't matter how he gets it done. Right is always going to win. He always believes in doing the right thing. He'll fight for the little guy every time. He doesn't like bullies. You know, he's like, all these things are like personal mantras of mine. I just really love that about the character. And Richson brought it to life because he's so, you know, in the books, he's like 6'5". He's a big hulking dude and he kind of lords over everybody. Not Tom Cruise. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Mm-hmm. In the show, he does that. And sometimes when they shoot him in a particular scene, it almost is like Lord of the Rings style where, you know, the other people are little hobbits and he's Gandalf the Grey. And I just love that about the character. I love, you know, how he really just doesn't care and he just does things that are very unpredictable. And I find a lot of television to be very predictable. So it's refreshing in that manner. And they've padded the show quite a bit, you know, in the first season and what looks to be in the second season, they've padded it quite a bit with additional material that works, which is, I think, a really hard thing to do with that character.
I think one of my favorite parts of Reacher is the very first episode when he's walking in the rain, about to walk inside the diner, and he's staring down that guy who's being a shit to his wife or his girlfriend, whoever it is, and all he does is just stare the guy down.
Just looks at him.
Yeah. That is such a great scene. And it's such a good message to send as far as how to treat people and how to look out for one another. It's just so, it's just so good. I like it.
They do a really good job of capturing in the books. A lot of the dialogue you hear is more internal dialogue because Reacher is told first person, and they, you know, work it into exposition, but don't make it too clunky. You know, it really does work. I really like what they've done with that. You know, my one thing that I'm really thankful for, the X-Files. And even though later seasons went to absolute hell and then came back and then went to hell again. But that is a show, not just because I love the show, that is a show that taught me to appreciate serialized television. Because I don't, you know, really up until that point, serialized television was more soap operas, things like that. It wasn't really based on anything that was on television because TV was so case of the week, episode of the week, that sort of thing. And X-Files really changed that because you had episodes that would be tied into previous episodes that could have been three or four episodes ago, and they're all tied together with this story that goes on and branches into multiple seasons and becomes this huge mythology that that show led to so many other shows taking that angle and, you know, just growing. And now almost everything is like that. And I think I'm thankful because X-Files is the show, I believe, that popularized that. Troy, you're a TV genius. Do you agree with that?
No, I think that's probably true. I never really thought about the X-Files being the first kind of serialized mythology-based item out there, because I've always attributed that more towards like the Bad Robot days, you know, as they progressed forward, like starting with Felicity.
But X-Files was huge before that, long before that.
Yeah. So, I mean, I never really even thought of it that way, just because it was, there's so many case of the week episodes, but you don't realize that each case of the week was actually throwing something together in order to make a grander finale at the end of the season, which tied into this like greater thing. Beyond that, right? Veronica Mars kind of fit that formula really well, where they had an A story, which was the season whodunit thing, and then the B story was like a six episode arc, and the C story was the case of the week. That model seems to work really, really well, and I wish more people would get back to that rather than, well, maybe it's a serialized, well, maybe it's a, you know, pick a format, stick to the format.
Well, X-Files nailed the format, at least for the first 6 years, yeah, until they, you know, Mulder left, right, and then it got crazy.
Yeah, right up to that first movie. I think it was really good.
It was good after the first movie. It was, to me. It's one,
the movie was just bad.
It's one, I liked the movie. It's once Duchovny left, it just, yeah, it became a different show, and I didn't like it. And the ending, the last couple episodes were just atrocious. And then they came back with a revisited series, and it had a lot of great moments. And then, of course, Chris Carter just doesn't know what he wants to do with that whole mythology. So, know your mythology. Have a Bible. That's one thing we learned, too.
And Millennium probably took a little bit from it as well.
Sure. Sure it did. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not sure which one I want to do next. So, I guess we had a group of friends in college, and I'm really thankful for this tight-knit group of people because we watched Party of Five together.
Oh,
and that's cool. So, like, we had literally had, like, it was the last... You know, other than recently with some friends of mine watching the last season of This Is Us, it was the last time we actually had like group physical same location TV watching, where we would watch, you know, Party of Five together. And I thought that was really cool because I think it solidified and bonded that group of people for many, many, many years to come. Still friends with many of them today. Yeah, I thought that was like, I'm just super thankful for that time in my life and that group of people I hung out with and the fact that we can still check in on each other. And even though it's almost like 30 years ago now, which is crazy. But just really thankful for those people and the time we spent together.
We need more stuff like that. You know, people don't talk about those kinds of memories and how TV brings people together. You know, watch parties and things like that. I had that with Game of Thrones. I mean, sometimes a TV show can bring people together where you can just like, let's all get together and watch this thing because we all bond over it. You can have like instant, like real emotional reactions. It's not like water cooler and it's not like social media. It's like a real instant connection over something. Had it with Lost. Well,
I'll take this with a thread. So I'm not trying to do two at once, Aaron, but the thread is that
it's okay. If it's natural conversation, I'm okay.
Yeah, the thread through was that Party of Five ended and we needed a new show to watch. And so, you know, we were watching Dawson's Creek. The group was like, eh, they don't talk like regular teenagers. This show's kind of dumb. But Dawson's Creek also bled into the show Felicity, which is one of J.J. Abrams' first shows. And Felicity is a show that I watched all four seasons with my now current wife, Tracy. And so that if that group of Party of Five hadn't happened, then the Felicity watch with my wife probably wouldn't have happened. So I think.
Does that mean you wouldn't be married? Does that mean Party of Five got you married, basically?
Possibly.
What?
Which is funny because that ties into then I watched Lost because, you know, we had, you know, the good old Dr. Jack from Lost, right? Mr. Fox. If you hadn't been on Party of Five, I wouldn't have actually started watching Lost because it was Fox plus J.J. Abrams got me to watch Lost. Wow.
So we can be happy for Party of Five and also pissed at it. Got it.
Right.
Yep.
And we can never get away from it.
We'll so come back to Lost.
Are you done? So, you know, as far as movies concerned, I've talked about this movie before, but one of the most movies that I'm most thankful for is Basic. It's not the greatest of movies, but it's got a good story to it.
It's a weird one to pick. I'm waiting to hear the why.
Bated breath.
Yeah. You know, so the reason why I'm thankful for it is because it's one of those movies that because it's quote unquote in Panama. And it's during the middle of the night and it's a rainy night and they do a really good job at capturing what it is to survive in the rain in the middle of the rainforest, which is it's constant and it happens all the time, which is what constant means. But the feeling to it is great. It is an interesting story, or at least enough of an interesting story to keep me engaged, and it just makes me feel good. It's one of those movies that I watch whenever I feel like I want to feel closer to my dad because he really likes the movie, and I really enjoy John Travolta's character and everybody else, and I like the whole thing to it, which is like, just got to tell the story right, and I like that.
All right, well, you made a reasonable explanation here, I guess.
Why are you so shocked? You sound shocked.
It's just not a great movie. I'm just like, if you're going to be thankful for something, I figured there was a really, you know, that's a good reason. You know, hey,
it's our John Aaron. Yeah. We know he's a little bit kind of grumpy Gus and Eeyore. It makes sense.
Doesn't mean he references bad movies, you know?
I know, but
not bad, him, it might be just less than
his great. His level of great is a little bit lower. So it's just, it fits.
Damn, he just threw shade right back at you.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. It's almost like I'm so used to not expecting the great out of things around me.
Well, not with that attitude. I'm thankful for the movie The Crow.
Why is it? Is it because it's been so hard to remake that movie that they keep getting close to it and then just veering off to the left?
I feel like if there's ever anything they should just leave alone, that's. Something
agree.
Should leave alone. You know, it's just, yes, the story behind it is tragic for people that might not know. I mean, it's 30 years old at this point, but The Crow, Brandon Lee was the actor, Bruce Lee's son. He was making the film. He got killed during filming because of a rogue round in a firearm. Michael Massey as the poor actor that was holding the gun at the time, his whole life was destroyed for quite some time. His whole career took a bad turn just because of the guilt, and it wasn't even his fault. He had no control over it. But Brandon Lee died, and the film at that point was thought to never be made. And then Brandon Lee's mother and family, they wanted it completed, so they did complete the film. I was a huge fan of Brandon Lee, like an up-and-coming fan. I had seen Showdown in Little Tokyo. I had seen Rapid Fire. I was so excited for The Crow. I just love the idea of they're going to make this a movie. This is awesome. And then that happened. And I remember seeing it on an opening weekend twice and just having such an emotional reaction because, you know, yeah, the death kind of hit me because I was becoming a huge fan of his. But then just seeing the film and the whole crux of the film revolves around someone who's murdered before their time and then comes back and gets revenge on those that done him wrong. And then it has this horribly tragic finale that is just beautifully handled with the wonderful score and soundtrack. just really, really hits me personally and still does to this day. Like, it's just one of those movies where I can put on if I want to feel something emotional for whatever reason. It also connected with me because my grandfather died around the same time. It's just there's a lot of emotional resonance for me. And so I'm very thankful for that movie.
I think that The Crow was one of those movies that just hit in a certain time and where the overall openness to people was different than it is today. And the overall there's a level of cynicism that we didn't have then, we definitely have today. I can tell you that I've had so many conversations with people ever since that movie came out about how Brandon Lee meant so much to them. They never knew who he was until they saw that movie and they felt so connected to him and they feel like they understand his spirit and they understand his soul and all these things about that movie. It just really hit people in such a way that I don't understand it, but I respect it a lot. And it is a beautiful movie as far as the way the story works and the way the ending happens. It's just can't be beat.
I think my next one is going to be probably Fringe. And the reason I say Fringe is because I think over Lost for this exact moment is that Fringe is the one show that actually got me more into wanting to do a podcast than just listen to podcasts.
Mm.
And because of that, I ended up becoming friends with a guy named Wayne Henderson. You've heard him on Remake This Movie Right a few times and doing all of our movie trailers on that podcast here on the Hollywood Outsider Network. And he did a show called Fringe Casting with Wayne and Dan. And I was listening to his podcast and would leave audio feedback and stuff on his podcast because I really, really enjoyed the show Fringe. Like, it was probably one of like X-Files for modern times at that point. And it really solidified a friendship between Wayne and I. Therefore, Wayne and I started to do podcasting. If Wayne and I hadn't done a podcast for Under the Dome on CBS, we never would have met the people that were doing Under the Dome for TV Talk. And if we hadn't met the people that did Under the Dome for TV Talk, we never would have gotten invited to be part of TV Talk, which is where we ended up getting the Blacklist assigned to us. And that led to the Blacklist Exposed on Golden Spiral Media. Also, I met Aaron TV Talk, who was doing the Sleepy Hollow podcast. And that led to Aaron and I exchanging the ability to get Packers tickets. And then we became friends and Aaron came and joined me on the Blacklist Exposed. And we rocked that out for Aaron for 9 years, me for 10 years. And that's why I'm sitting here today. So if it wasn't for Fringe, none of this would have happened.
That's fantastic.
See, Aaron, now I understand why you don't like Fringe.
I do like Fringe. I just never finished Fringe. Once you get to the fourth season and it's like, you know, basically it's a multiverse. And if you know anything about me, I'm not a fan of the multiverse concept.
Yeah, it's they only do that multiverse thing for a very long.
There's a reason for it.
Right. It makes,
yeah,
it makes,
there's always a reason for it.
In the end, it makes sense. And they don't really do anything stupid with it. I will say that Fringe is by far one of my favorite television shows in history. I have revisited that one several times, especially in the last few years, as I have needed some place to retreat back to, some place that feels good, some place that feels like home, and some place that feels mine. And Fringe happens to be one of those places that I get to retreat into. I love the relationship between Peter and Dr. Bishop, Peter and Walter. I love that relationship. I love the relationship between Peter and Olivia, and I love Olivia and Walter's relationship, and even Astrid's relationship with everybody in the team. All those the relationships are so well thought out, and they're so well taken care of and considered and move forward in a way that makes sense to the whole story. And not only that, but it lives in a world where anything is possible, and I love that aspect of it.
Especially when it comes to the fans, because the fans are the ones that got it its fifth season.
That's very true, too. So I'm coming up with stuff that I can talk about that won't upset Aaron, because, you know, Aaron gets upset because I do bring up some stuff that some old stuff that I talk about a lot. But one of the things that I have to.
You mean like the same two shows every time?
Yeah, the same two shows every time. So one of the things I do have to bring up is as far as a new movie that's recently out, is the new Dungeons and Dragons movie. that movie made me feel so good to be a fan of the role-playing game. It made me feel so good to see that people can care about something like that as much as we care about comic books, as much as we care about Star Wars, and they can give it the same sort of reverence and care that it deserves. You know, there's, if you know how to play D&D, there's a little tricks and trades there throughout the whole movie, which, you know, oh, he's totally rolling a one, or rolling a one right now. That's why he can't untie that rope. That's a critical failure for sure. Oh, that's a critical success. You know, there's so many things that are great nods to how to play the tabletop that only enhance the things for people who played D&D, but don't take it away for those people who don't know what those things are and those who don't play. And the story is fantastic. It's just so well done.
It was a wonderful movie.
Super fun.
Really wish that would have caught on a little bit more and we'd be getting more of it, but hey, not everything can hit.
I thought I read someplace that they were going to do that. They were going to do another one, but only with a smaller budget.
Yeah, if they could get that approved. That was before the strike, though.
So right.
We'll see if that ever happens. I don't know if you could do it with a smaller budget. I'll connect two because they should be connected. Moonlighting and Night Court, I'm thankful for those because they give me my personality. I wouldn't have my personality without those two shows. It's just a matter of fact. It's not even a debate. My mother and I used to watch those religiously. Dan Fielding and David Addison are different sides of my id. And I just started rewatching Moonlighting because it's on Hulu now. And it just took me back to my childhood. You know, I remember having all those videotapes. You know, you would record your show back in the day. VHS tapes, you'd be recording your shows, taping over things that your mom had watched or your mom had recorded, and you're like, nah, she don't need that. I need Night Court. And that's what I would have. I would have tape upon tape upon tape of Night Court and Moonlighting, and I would just watch them in an endless repeat. Like, I had Night Court memorized. I have the first four seasons memorized still of Night Court, and the first two to three seasons of Moonlighting. So I'm actually rewatching it on Hulu, and with my wife, who had never seen a lot of the episodes, and I'm telling her the joke before it hits, and I have to stop myself because I'm just that well aware of how the humor works and the beats and everything else. And I forgot just how wonderfully romantic it was shot and how just warmly lit Cybill Shepherd is in every single frame. It's just it, and David Addison is, you know, Bruce Willis is shot very normally. He's just, you know, rough and tumble, and that's just how he shot. But every time you get a close-up of Cybill Shepherd, it's very soft. It's very much a filter of sorts, and she just looks glorious, like almost like an angel glowing. So I'm thankful for those two shows because they really made my childhood better.
They really used that Vaseline on the lens trick for Cybill Shepherd, but it couldn't care less for Bruce, huh?
Pretty much, yep.
Well, I never got into Moonlighting. It wasn't my thing, but God, Night Court. I recently would say in the last year, sat down and watched as much Night Court as I possibly could before I just got carried away and did something else, which I think I watched the first four or five seasons of it. You know, you say that your personality is made up of Dan Fielding. Mine has... It's really like a trifecta of Dan Fielding, Harry Stone, and Bull Shannon that I kind of pick and choose my favorite parts of.
Okay.
I loved Harry for the fact that he never gave up on people, how he always saw the best that he could in people. I loved Dan for the fact that he was guarded in the way that he's guarded, and he was so snarky and fun. And then I love Bull just for his openness, his ability to be kind of childlike just things that I loved about that character. And the fact that as soon as he had to stand up for somebody, it was a problem for whoever he was standing up against. You know, that those are all things that I loved about all those characters.
I love those shows too. I was maybe sideline watcher, picked up an episode here and there. I never really watched all of them all the way through. But I'm glad that they inform the characterization of the two of you, because if you were any different, I don't know if I'd be able to put up with your bullshit every week.
Aw.
So.
God, I wish you watched it more.
I see what you did there.
That,
That took me a second.
I kid. I love Troy.
Well, he's got a little bit of that. You know, Psych. Psych. We're all on board with the Psych train. Like, we're all thankful for Psych.
Oh, absolutely.
So, Sean and Gus forever. You know what I mean?
In a way, Scrubs as well.
I never got into Scrubs, but, you know,
Scrubs,
you guys
is, yeah. Like, the... Every time I think about Scrubs, I can't stop thinking about the... There was two things that I think about the most when it comes to Scrubs. The Brendan Fraser episode, but really the whole Guy Love song, where they start singing this whole song about how Turk and JD are best friends and they have love for each other and they're not afraid to show love for each other. There's that I... It was, in a way, it was so before its time, because it wasn't like... a bro thing. It was definitely a different kind of more realistic or more accessible to love each other and accept the fact that you're so different from one another.
Also, I mean, everybody talks about the Buffy musical being one of the best musical TV episodes. I think Scrubs actually capitalized on that fame, because that musical episode encapsulated everything that Scrubs was into that musical, and I thought it was really fantastic how they were able to pull that off, because I didn't think they were going to be able to pull it off for a 22-minute sitcom.
Yeah, no, they really did pull that off, and the whole series as a whole, up until they lost the hospital technically, and had to change their cast because people were leaving, did such a good job of balancing the humor, but with abject terror of what it is like to work in a hospital. Like, they did such a good job of making sure that you were able to enjoy it, but there is some real aspects that they let sink in and how that affected everybody.
Yeah, it was like they took the relationship side of Grey's Anatomy combined with the seriousness and drama of ER and just added humor to it, and it just was like the perfect combo. You know, and I don't even look at the post season 8 Scrubs as Scrubs. I think of it as like Saved by the Bell, the new class.
it's
really Scrubs, the new class. Yeah. When that finale happens and JD walks out of the hospital down the hallway with everybody there, mm-hmm. I mean, it's, and just the ending, it's so, so perfect for that show. But yeah, when you go back and think about TV and how they teach TV, that episode with Brendan Fraser, My Screw Up in season 3, mm-hmm. that is the quintessential episode of how to write extremely well and produced well and executed well. That is probably like the best episode of television ever done. And that's not as a super fan. That's like articles have said, like, this is how you write a script, because you're on your toes for the entire 22 minutes. And it feels like a 45-minute drama, like just executed perfectly. But yeah. I love pennies. I love eagles. I love taxidermy dogs. I love poopers on the roof. I love all kinds of things from that show.
Okay. All right, then.
I guess probably my final one, since we're probably running long, but you have to mention Lost. I mean...
No, you have to mention Lost. I don't
know. None of us neither really do that.
Lost was... No. Sorry, John. I know it's a hard spot for you now. But Lost is one that really, we were at a point in time where the internet started to take over the world. We had ubiquitous high-speed internet was coming into the foreway. Podcasting had just got its RSS standard situated. And the ability to finally have water cooler conversations, because we were in the age of DVR where nobody was watching anything live, to have a show that needed to be talked about the next morning live, or even the next minute after it ended on the East Coast, you know, getting internet communities together, getting podcasts together, The Transmission, Jay and Jack, the official podcast, the Lost podcast on the Golden Spiral Media Network. And, oh my gosh, there's just a ton of them out there. Wayne and Dan did one for Lost, and the Ravenscast, Cliff Ravenscraft did one on GSPN.TV. And it was just, that was like a moment where internet people became friends, right? We were literally this group of complete geeks that were looking up websites and books and research, and what was the book that Sawyer was reading this week? Are there clues in that book? And what's the question mark? And like the sleuthing that went on for 5 to 6 seasons on that show was pretty impressive on what the internet was able to come to do as a community to come together for like a common good. And I don't understand why we haven't been able to recapture that yet. Game of Thrones might have been there, but Game of Thrones was, you know, more of the, you know, keyboard warrior, I'm right, you're wrong, Star Wars kind of feel. Lost felt like it was the last like good thing on the internet, right? Especially because they did these alternate reality games on the internet where you got to bounce around and share clues with people. Oh, I figured this one out. And you had to like get a team of people together to like figure out stuff because you couldn't do it on your own. Some people knew hex and some people knew binary and some people knew ASCII. And it's like, it was so cool. And I think what people didn't really understand in that show, Aaron, was that it was about the people.
Jesus. Oh, this stupid argument again.
And not about the island.
You're right. And we just spent 6 years trying, you know, having mysteries every freaking episode about the island. But you're right. It was all about the people. The island didn't matter. Weird.
But the people.
If that was true, it could have happened in a skyscraper. It couldn't. It had to happen on that freaking island.
It could have.
So the island mattered.
I mean, it could have.
But the people happened in the show. Skyscraper. Yeah. Yeah. But the people and the journeys they went on and why they were lost and why they were broken and why they needed each other and why these people met at this particular time and this particular place, that was the message the show was saying. And that's what was happening in real life. We were all meeting together at this one point, at this one time, in this particular place, and talking and sharing and going on journeys. And you found people that liked the same things you did and people that didn't like the same things you did, but you were able to still be friends like Aaron and I. And you're able to like just make that happen. And if it wasn't for Lost, Fringe doesn't happen and podcasting doesn't happen and the way it does with these fan podcasts. And it's just Lost was such a pivotal moment and the biggest pilot ever on TV at that point. So they're like, oh, we can do, you know, $1 million TV show. So Game of Thrones happens. It's a quintessential shift in television that we've been trying to recreate ever since. And it just hasn't happened like Lost has happened. Until Game of Thrones in a different way. So I'm just really super thankful for what it gave to the television industry, to the actors, to the friends that were made from it, to the point where we're now trying to fund a documentary for it.
I would equate it to Game of Thrones. I feel like, at least in my circles, it felt very similar. It was a little bigger with Game of Thrones because I had more people that wanted to watch it with me than Lost. Lost was very niche. It wasn't as mass appeal, I guess. But similar. Similar till the end.
So I really love Lost for what it did to TV at the time, but I hate what it did to TV since. And the reason why I say that is because it's not necessarily that TV has gotten worse or that TV, you know, shows aren't as good or anything else like that. But there was a shift in people themselves that were fans of Lost that to me seemed to not let go of the fact that Lost is gone. So if there was another show that came along that was could have had its chances or could have been just as decent, but it wasn't Lost. So it wasn't good enough for people. We had a couple of different shows that came out around the same time or near the end of Lost, like Fast Forward, which was a really good first season of television, got canceled.
Flash Forward.
I believe it was called Evolution, was another one that was a really great first season of television. 13 episodes, didn't get anything moving forward. There's a lot of things that nobody really wanted to give a chance to because it wasn't Lost. This is something where I start blaming the fandom of Lost for it, because if it's not something they love right away, like they quote unquote did for Lost, then they weren't going to give it time. And there's a lot of things we all missed out on because of it. So as much as I appreciate Lost, fuck Lost.
Man, I think that has more to do with studio heads that are trying to replicate Lost success than it is the fans. I don't know how that's their fault that they enjoy something.
I agree with Aaron 100%. Because I loved Flash Forward. I think it was Revolution, I think was the one you were looking for, which actually had Elizabeth on there.
No.
Who was one of the actors from Lost.
No, it's Evolution. It's the one with Lake Bell. No, Surface. I'm sorry. That's Surface.
Yeah.
Yep. It dealt with
Evolution. Boy, you were so committed to your argument, too. You're like, no, it was Evolution.
No. It was Surface was good.
No, that's a movie with David Duchovny.
That's another great movie that I love so much.
The aliens.
Yeah, that one was aliens. Yeah,
Yeah.
The aliens and the hurricane, that was...
No, that was something else.
That wasn't Surface. That was Invasion. Something like that. Start with an I.
Yeah.
There's been 100 Invasion. Of them. There's been 100 of them. You'll be going on this forever.
Right.
Yeah. But I think Aaron's right. I think it's really the studio execs were like, this is too complicated. We're losing viewers. This is too, you know... And somehow Manifest, of all freaking shows, is the one that goes like 5 years. I don't understand, because I gave up on that show as a Lost fan because it did get stupid.
I think he just proved my point.
Did he? Last one. Let's not fight for Lost for 45 minutes.
I am going to say that I'm thankful for Godzilla, just because Godzilla reminds me of that childlike wonder that I like to keep and I want to enjoy. And it also reconnects me to people in my family that I get to relive some memories while I'm watching it, or as if I was watching it with them. And it's just, I love Godzilla, and I love where Godzilla is going, and I love how he's a big deal again. Even if he's not that big of a deal, he's a big deal to me, and that's why I love Godzilla.
That's good, man. That's what you're thankful for, right? My last one, my biggest one, is Indiana Jones. I've professed my love for most of the movies multiple times in this podcast over the years. But when I was a kid, Indiana Jones, Raiders of the Lost Ark, Temple of Doom, Last Crusade, all those, they were just like the highlight of my childhood. They were the best thing about my childhood. I got a fedora for Christmas 1 year, and I wore it like the whole year. I got a generic wannabe whip. I was constantly getting myself in trouble with that thing. I just wanted to adventure. It made me discover history, made me discover archaeology, made me discover dinosaurs. You know, like, it just propelled a lot of learning in my own mind, as well as a lot of adventure. I wanted to go out and I wanted to discover things, and I wanted to get caught up in adventures, and it like really unlocked the creative portion of my mind. You know, for a lot of people, it would probably be Star Wars and things like that. That wasn't what really unlocked my creativity. It was Indiana Jones. It was just, you know, taking you to treasure hunts, and that whole concept is just, I just love it. If to this day, if you say, hey, I've got a map, we're going to want to go on a treasure hunt, I'm going to be like, yeah, I do. I want to go feel like a kid again. And two of my best movie going memories are centered around Indiana Jones. Three of them, actually. The first time we went inside Indiana Jones, the Temple of Doom, my entire family went with, because I was so excited to see the second one that they all wanted to be part of it. And they all came, and it was just a wonderful time. We had a whole row. There was like 10 people that came with just to support me, because I love that movie so much. It was very sweet, because my family didn't do stuff like that. And then Temple of Doom came out on video that year. And I asked for it for Christmas. My mom did get it for me for Christmas. I actually secretly, this is where I'm very mischievous, I guess, but I had figured out a way to unwrap it and rewrap it every time, so that I could take the tape out, and every time she's at work, I would watch that video. So I watched Temple of Doom probably 30 times before I got it for Christmas, because I knew which one it was, because I just had mastered how to unwrap it and rewrap it without her knowing. Ah, love that. And then my last one was when Crystal Skull came out. My mom, my dad, my kids, my wife, we all went and saw the Crystal Skull. I don't care how the movie was for you. I just don't care. People will tell me, well, yeah, but that movie was this. I don't care. Still a fantastic experience, because my whole family, I got to sit with my kids who had become excited about Indiana Jones because of me. And I went with my mom, who is the one that took me to the first Indiana Jones movie and always supported me and my creativity. So there's just, it's a magical, magical franchise for me. And I'm so thankful for that.
What you don't know is that Aaron's kids don't talk to him anymore after that experience.
I put them up for adoption when they didn't like the most recent movie. Kidding. They both loved it. They both loved it.
You know, I like that. In a lot of ways. I mean, it goes back to one of the reasons why certain movies or certain experiences that I have always take me back to my brother, because when it came to going to the movies, that's who I went to the movies with. I can only count and I don't even need my whole hand for it, but I can only count on one hand the amount of times that I went to the movies with my dad and my mom and everybody. But my brother and I would run off and go to the movies all the time. He took me to go see, I actually sat down and rewatched Terminator 2 Judgment Day today just because, you know, I sort of miss my brother. And that's one of the movies that I remember going to. See in the theater with him. One of these days I'll have to watch Godzilla 1990, whatever it was, that terrible Godzilla movie that wasn't great. But still, I even though that's not a great Godzilla movie, I still watch it just because I saw it in the theater with my brother, and it takes me back to him every single time.
Those are my favorite kinds of memories.
Yeah, mine too.
All right, we put this topic up on our Facebook group just to poll people and like, tell us some movies that you're thankful for. And we each picked out two that we thought were very interesting or insightful.
And I'll pick Anna Maria here. She said, House MD. This show still holds a really special place for me. It wasn't perfect to be sure, but Hugh Laurie and the writers created an extremely complex character who could be difficult to root for at times. Certain seasons were also very uneven. That being said, though, it crystallized so much of what I was feeling at the time and help mature my thinking a lot. It sounds pretentious, I know, but that's my story. There it is.
Chuck Gibbons says that the shows that he's watched many times and still loves are West Wing, The Office, House, and I'm currently rewatching Studio 60 for the nth time. In memory of Matthew Perry's best work.
Such a good show.
I've never watched it, but the moment of silence for Matthew Perry.
Again? How many does he get?
You know, it's Matthew Perry. I think he at least gets three.
All
right, let's pour one out for episodes? Him then. Let's just pour one out for him. Let's do that.
That's funny. Let's see. Oh, you know what? This is worth mentioning. Vicky Calgaro, Ted Lasso, Schitt's Creek. Those are the last two shows that truly put me in a happy place. And I think that's worth noting for a couple of reasons. One, Schitt's Creek and Ted Lasso both were prominent during the pandemic, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
I got to say, those two shows, and I've watched them both ad nauseum, probably Schitt's Creek a lot more than Ted Lasso, but I've watched them both a lot. They really did bring joy when I was really lacking in joyful content. And like Schitt's Creek just spoke to me on a spiritual level by the end of it. Like I cried so much the last three seasons of that show in a happy way.
Right. Like
beautiful cries. And Ted Lasso had a lot of that too. So yeah, good shout out. Those are two shows I'm thankful for. They got, I think, a lot of people through a really hard couple of years.
I would have to say that Schitt's Creek is one of those shows that I have to thank because during the pandemic, I also went through a different kind of hard time. And Schitt's Creek was something that was constantly playing. And it definitely helped me through some of those times.
Yeah. And I think, given our age group too, Becky Trumbo and again, Vicky Calgaro, you know, talked a lot about those 80s, late 80s, early 90s sitcoms like Punky Brewster, Moonlighting, The Cosby Show, Family Ties, Growing Pains, just building up who we are and our personalities. And, you know, sometimes our families weren't the greatest, so we try to escape into seeing what family life could be like during those times. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, definitely thankful for those shows as we were in our formidable years.
Formidable years.
The days of kick the can and run around the neighborhood and make sure you're home before the streetlights come on because there was no internet.
You had to be home before the streetlights came on?
Well, if you're on your bike because your bike didn't have a light.
No.
Did you not have to be home by the time the streetlights were on? You know, yeah, nope, you had to do that in the States.
Yeah, we had to listen for my mom's bell. She had a giant bell.
She had a collar?
She would sit there and there was a giant like gong that she would start the hit, and it would just like resonate throughout the like for at least a mile, and we had to listen for that. If she started hitting that mean we had to come home.
Damn. All right then.
Yeah.
Serious.
People respect the bell. Okay, well that's gonna do it for this episode. No, it's not. We're gonna go to reviews. Forgot what we were doing. All right, Next Goal Wins, and then we're gonna talk about the Marvels shortly after that.
All right, Next Goal Wins was directed by Academy Award winner Taika Waititi. Of Jojo Rabbit and Thor Ragnarok fame. The Next Goal, the American Samoa soccer team, infamous for their brutal 31-0 FIFA loss in 2001. With the qualifiers approaching, the team hires down-on-his-luck Maverick coach Thomas Rongen played by Michael Fassbender, hoping he will turn the world's worst soccer team around in this heartfelt underdog of a movie. It's got a lot of great people in here in this one, Aaron. You got to see this. We need a good feel-good, pick-me-up kind of movie. Does Cool Runnings on the soccer field actually work in this day and age?
Yeah, it's totally what it is. Yeah, I mean, it is Cool Runnings with Taika Waititi's sensibilities thrown in the mix, right? So it's very fun. It's, you know, it's kind of sweet because it's showing, it's very Ted Lasso in that way, if that's your hook. Troy, it won't work for John, but it'll work for Troy. Very much because it's, you know, centered around soccer, and it's also about a lovable group of losers that they're okay with where they are. They want to get better, but they don't want to sacrifice who they are to do it. You know, they just want to get one goal, one freaking goal. But unfortunately, they have this very angry coach who's Michael Fassbender, who's dealing with his own struggles and whatnot. And he wants them to be great players. They want to do good. They want to win, but they want to be happy. They want to love each other when they do it. They don't want animosity. They don't want angst. They want to just deal with things in their own way. And there's a lot of clever things that I think are handled here fairly well. There's the Kaimana plays a trans player, which is really a very important aspect to the story and works so well because it isn't like trying to hammer any lesson into your head. It's just basically showing, hey, just a person. It's just a person, you know, and she's just a person. She's on the team. And how that interaction with Michael Fassbender's character, who doesn't understand because of where he's coming from, where he's coached male soccer teams before, and it doesn't make any sense to him, and he has to come around to it. That storyline actually works really, really well. It's very, very sweet and very heartfelt. Love that aspect of it. It's a fun movie. It's meant to be just kind of, you know, sweet family entertainment, and that's what it is. The only thing I would say is that it does go from 0 to 60 a little too fast. I mean, I feel like he changes his personality way too quick, but I also think that's probably the only mistake on the movie's part is I think Michael Fassbender, though a wonderful dramatic actor, the killer, very, very great in that movie, wonderful in that movie. I think he's miscast here.
I mean, you talk about like all the things that were done on the field with the team and all of that, but more importantly, it's about this American Samoa group of people. Does it do a good representation of what it's like to be an American Samoan and the things that they stand for culturally and as they have this conflict with Michael Fassbender as a coach?
Yeah, that's what I'm mostly speaking to. I mean, they refuse to basically go to his level. They don't want to be the best in the world because they would have to change who they are. They want to continue to be positive thinking people, kind people, loving people, open to everyone. You know, that's who they are, and they want to remain that way. They want to get better, but they don't want to sacrifice who they are to do it. And that's, I think, the moral of the story.
What about runtime? I mean, movies are getting longer. Does this feel like in that 90-minute stretch, like it's 90 minutes, or does it feel like it's 60 because of how fast-paced and how quickly the plot moves?
Well, it's an hour and 43, so it definitely doesn't feel 90, and it doesn't feel an hour. It feels well-paced. It actually feels appropriate. I wasn't bored.
That's good.
I wasn't bored.
Yeah, I mean, because you get a lot of times with these kinds of feel-good movies, it's a very similar script, right? You know, oh, hey, we're a horrible team, and oh, hey, look, we're getting better, and oh, hey, we had a setback, and oh, hey, we win at the end. Is there anything surprising in this movie that wouldn't fit that formula that people should look out for?
No, it's pretty formulaic. I mean, I think if you've seen the trailer, you kind of get what kind of movie it is, but it is entertaining, and there's a lot of humor and a lot of love. There's a lot of love in it, too. It doesn't quite hit the Ted Lasso level, but it gets there. It gets close.
All right. Well, if next goal wins is $10 to go see, what are you giving it?
I give it $6.50. I think it'd be a little bit higher, but there's a lot of scenes where I just feel like Michael Fassbender is not the right guy for this role. Okay, so now we're going to talk about the Marvels. Troy has headed out of here because we're going to talk a little bit about the spoilers of this one. Just know, I really enjoyed this film. I was pleasantly surprised with how fun it was. Overall thoughts. John, do you agree or you don't agree?
Yeah, no, I agree wholeheartedly. I found this to be one of those Marvel movies where I found myself laughing and smiling more than not. So, yeah, I wholeheartedly agree.
Okay, so we're going to dance into spoilers here, so just be warned if you haven't seen the film. But Carol Danvers, a.k.a. Captain Marvel, has reclaimed her identity from the tyrannical Kree and taken revenge on the Supreme Intelligence. But unintended consequences see Carol shouldering the burden of a destabilized universe. When her duties send her to a wormhole linked to a Kree revolutionary, her powers become entangled with that of a Jersey City superfan, Kamala Khan, a.k.a. Miss Marvel, who's absolutely adorable, and Carol's estranged niece, now Saber astronaut, Captain Monica Rambeau. Lots of captains running around. Some misses and a captain. And, of course, this is just one more example of how the trio will go higher, further, and faster together. Now, whew, that was a lot of words put together. What I want to ask you first up, when it comes to the Marvels, what did you think about the chemistry of the three leads? Because they chose to not really have Captain Marvel be number one on the call sheet. I think this is shared pretty evenly, actually.
During the beginning of the movie, I sort of caught myself thinking, oh, it's really Miss Marvel and Captain Marvel's movie. But then as the movie progresses, you are in the middle of the movie and it's really all three of them, you know, Captain Marvel, Miss Marvel, Binary, all of them are interacting pretty well. And then it becomes very much about Captain Marvel and Binary, or Monica Rambeau. I'm assuming she's supposed to be Binary, but I don't know. I like the way they did this shift, because they were able to really bring Brie Larson back down to earth, because in the first movie, she didn't have much personality. She didn't have that charm that she has in so many other things that we've seen her in. And here she's got that charm. She's got that ability. She's finally settled into the role, and I'm okay with seeing her here and appreciating her and Tiana and Iman very much. How about you?
Yeah, I think Tiana probably didn't stand out as much as the other two, but hers is more, she has more of a serious role. Iman Vellani, who plays Kamala, is the star of the movie to me. I mean, she was the absolute highlight. There wasn't a section of the film where she shows up that she wasn't the most interesting thing on the screen, which is saying something when your sequel to one of the most popular Marvel movies that we've had, which is Captain Marvel, was a huge monster hit. It's the most successful female superhero movie of all time. This, it was an interesting way to go, because it's not focused really solely on her, and honestly isn't the most interesting character in it. I find that interesting. But I will say, in complete fairness, I was not a fan of Brie Larson in Captain Marvel. Thought she was very stiff and kind of boring and mundane. Loved her here.
Yes. Yeah, I agree. She agree with both those points.
She made the adjustments that were necessary. They tweaked the script, I guess, probably to kind of suit her a little bit more. Nia DaCosta, who directed this, obviously understands the value of making this team flow, because they have a really nice dynamic. And even though, you know, I said Tiana is Monica Rambeau, I don't think her character's any less. I just think she didn't get some of the flashier things to do. She didn't have the jokes that Kamala has, and she didn't have, you know, a lot of the heroics that Carol Danvers has, because she's Captain Marvel. She can do a lot more than both of these two.
Right.
So, but the three together I thought were wonderful. I really love this. They kind of have equal screen time. All three of them have their own arcs, which I really just love to see. And overall, this is the most fun I've had in a Marvel movie in a long time.
Yeah, I would say as far as the Marvel movies we got this year, it's this and it's Guardians. Not much else.
Well, Quantumania sucked. Eternals sucked. The last Thor movie sucked. I haven't really had a lot of fun. I feel like Guardians was more heartfelt.
Right.
Had a lot of fun, of course, too. A great movie. Don't get me wrong. I loved Guardians 3. Mm-hmm. I just feel like maybe this one, because it took me by surprise. I wasn't expecting much. I was so let down by Captain Marvel, the first movie. I wasn't expecting a whole lot. And I had Quantumania, which I really did not like that movie at all. And Thor, I thought was awful. So I was like, well, this is going to, whatever. And I ended up loving it. Like, I had no problems with any scene. I was just so enthralled with everything that was happening in this trio. And especially like the first half hour. And I know some people probably were getting annoyed with it, but that whole switching where they where they were punching and each of them are switching places, because basically they have this power that traps them together. And so when they hit with the right hand or whatever, it would switch places.
It's whenever they use their powers at the same time, their light powers at the same time.
And they would switch places and they would alternate. And this, this goes on for like 20 or 25 minutes, 30 minutes, whatever it is. And I thought it was just masterfully done. Like, Nia DaCosta directed this, shot this, and I'm sure the editors that worked on it just did a beautiful job, because it was flawless as far as I was concerned. I was so energized by how they did that.
Did a really good job with the beats, with the pacing of it. They did a good job with making sure that it told the story in such a way that it was followable, but also it was engaging, especially each time, you know, because each time somebody was a fish out of water in their situation, and they had to reset every single time. So especially seeing Kamala Khan running around the Kree spaceship and then meeting Goose and then being like and freaking out over Goose and Goose doing Goose things, like, that was just great.
Oh, Goose was so great. And every time Kamala was, oh my god, the herding cat scene.
Oh yeah,
fantastic. This the idea of, like, we're gonna swallow up all these people. That was such a Guardian scene, wasn't it?
Oh, absolutely.
It took me completely out of my shoes, man. I was just shook.
Yeah. We're gonna actually be herding cats.
I loved it. So genius, man. There's a lot of inventiveness here that man, the first movie could have used, really just could have used. They go to the singing planet. That felt like, man, that's Taika Waititi or James Gunn. That really felt like one of their elements. Didn't really feel like anything we've seen in other Marvel movies. And I loved it. And I know some people hated it, like a singing planet. I thought it was great, man. Women love to sing. There's nothing wrong with that. So they go to a planet and they sing. And it's just the idea of the kind of stiff Captain Marvel I remembered actually being married to on a planet where she has to sing all the time, I thought was wonderful.
Yeah. Oh god, that was one of the best points, where when the prince starts speaking English or speaking normally without the singing, and she's like, yeah, he's bilingual. That was so great. It's just a small stupid joke, but it fits so well in there. You know, the thing that I thought was really interesting is, it's okay, so the movie, it's taking place on several different planets, right? Mm-hmm. And it has sort of that planetary feel to it, but it's shot very tight. It's either you're on a corridor in a spaceship, or you're on a space station, or you're in Kamala's house, and it kind of stays like that for a long time, and then it never gets into this point where you really are in this big, vast, open world that has huge world-ending stakes. And even the moments that have world-ending stakes don't feel that bad, you know? You know what I mean?
Yes, like it felt like a more condensed version of the bigger Marvel movies,
right?
It wasn't so like the world's gonna end again, the world's gonna end again, the world. I mean, yes, it meant the world could end for sure, but or a world could end, but in the same token, it played it down a little bit. And yeah, that's absolutely true. I agree with that.
Yeah, it wasn't so much like the, oh, here's this MacGuffin we have to chase, and then here's this big light beam in the sky. It wasn't so much of that, or if it was so well put in that you didn't notice it like you do in a lot of other things.
And there's a lot of family dynamics at play. The relationship between Kamala and her family, Carol and Monica's relationship based on, you know, Monica's relationship with her mom and Carol's relationship with her mom, the relationship with Nick Fury and Carol. Like, there's a lot of dynamics that I think played off very well. And I love the fact that I didn't have to watch all that Marvel shit to understand what was going on, because I barely watched any of them, and I totally got everybody's character.
I totally got it, too. And speaking of Nick Fury and Sam Jackson, this is one of the times where I've loved him the most, I think.
He has fun in this one.
Oh, he has a blast in this one. The other ones, he's always doing something that, I'm Nick Fury, I'm the biggest spy whatsoever, blah, blah, blah. You know, and this time he is cracking wise. He's playing with a goddamn cat as if it's, you know, and then he is so happy when he sees all the little cats running around. Like, there's so much to that that makes it made him such a joy to watch on screen. And it made me remember one of the reasons why we love Sam Jackson so much.
Oh, absolutely. It was so nice to see Sam Jackson loosen up a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, because in Secret Invasion, not very loose Sam Jackson. This, so much more loose.
Didn't even watch it, so I couldn't even tell you.
Well, I'm helping you out.
Zoe Ashton as Darben, she's the big bad. That's probably the only character that I thought was a little...
meh?
Yeah, kind of meh. Mavel.
Yeah,
it wasn't a very effective villain.
She's another in a long line of Marvel Mevels or Mevels.
Yeah, I like that. Mevel villains.
Yeah, Mevel villains. It's just another one in the long line of villains that just don't really matter as much. And it's a shame because, the actress Zawe, she obviously has screen presence. She obviously has ability, but it just didn't ever feel like they gave her a lot to do.
No, they didn't. They didn't give her a lot to do. So I want to talk real quick about this. So a lot has been made about the movie crashed and burned. It made like $47 million. It made under $50 million, lowest opening weekend for any Marvel Cinematic Universe official movie, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And 110 or so worldwide when it opened. So a lot of people are saying, well, obviously the movie sucked. And the critics, were kind of pulverizing it a little bit. Look, opening weekend box office does not determine if a movie sucks. Number one, I think you can't just use that to your advantage when it works to your advantage and not use it when it doesn't. Like when you love a movie, when Killers of the Flower Moon made far less money and people are saying it's a masterpiece.
Right.
You can't equate the two. Box office doesn't equal quality. Number one.
Right.
Number two, I think it has way more to do with lackluster films and oversaturation of Marvel content and the feeling that these movies aren't event films anymore, except for legacy sequels. Ant-Man had a $100 million weekend. It was also the third Ant-Man movie. You had Thor. It was the fourth Thor movie. So that had a big opening weekend. It plummeted pretty quick after that. Guardians, $100+ million weekend, legacy sequel. Captain Marvel's coming off an overabundance of content, and you have characters that were on the TV show. So I don't think it feels, Ms. Marvel had her own series. Monica was on WandaVision. I don't think it felt so event-like. It felt more like an extension of the TV universe than which means wait for Disney Plus, than it did, I got to go to the theater. What do you think led to the less than stellar results?
There's the two strikes that were happening at the same time. So promotion of this wasn't as big as it should have been, I think, as well. So mm-hmm. you have the ability, not you have the lack of ability to sit there and promote a movie as much as you really should be promoting a movie. I think a lot of movies that have come out during the strike period have suffered from that. So there's that. I do want to talk about the fact that there's a lot of noise about how Disney is barbifying Marvel and barbifying Star Wars, because that's all it seems to be, something that they're pushing to create more characters that are female or female led properties so that they can capitalize on the fact that girls want to follow somebody who makes them feel like it's them on the screen, right? And yet there are people who are poo-pooing the whole idea about it, or claiming
the Disney go woke argument.
Yeah, the whole Disney go woke argument about it, because how dare you bring girls into my comic books or anything else like that, to which I say, shut up, enjoy the show and have a good time. Stop trying to make this argument that it's because they're trying to create things that are more
universally accepted.
That's it. That's where I was going to go with it. Things that are more universally accepted, more things that are more appealing to another part of the demographics that are available out there. So why not do that? Like, I don't get it. But that's another thing, too, where there is a lot of noise against this movie because of how it's a female-led property.
Why don't they ever say that when it's like a male-led property?
Because it's usually guys saying it.
That's fair. There's no validity to it. The movie's fun. It's just, it's fun. I don't care who the stars of it are. The stars work. They are entertaining, male, female, whatever. It's a good time, you know, and it's way better than freaking Quantumania or any of that nonsense. And I tell you what, I also think the multiverse has burned people out. I feel like the woke argument you're trying to bring up, people only mention that when something doesn't do well, but if something does great, they leave it alone. Barbie was pretty freaking woke and did great.
Right.
If you're going to use that as your barometer. I just think it's a ridiculous argument that just makes people feel like they can point a finger or something. And whatever. This is a fun movie. It's a return to form, I think, for Marvel. Don't care if it's men, women, whatever. Just make me a good movie. And they made a good movie.
I will say that they made a good movie. I'm not going to say yet that it's a return to form because it's just two movies back to back that are, you know.
Not even back to back because Thor sucked.
No. Guardians was the most recent movie.
Guardians came out before Thor.
No, it didn't.
Yes, it did. Thor Love and Thunder came out in July.
No, it didn't.
Oh, shit. You're right. Came out last year. Son of a bitch.
It was Guardians of Galaxy that came out in July.
Okay, it's July. No, well, Guardians came out in May.
Okay, May. All right, so I'm wrong too. But yeah, okay. I thought I was, you were about to drive me to the point where I thought I was crazy. Cause I'm like, I know Love and Thunder is older than that.
Anyway, go back with your point.
Anyways, that's two movies, Guardians and this. To me, that's a coincidence. It's not a trend yet.
I hope, well, return to form for me, I don't mean like all their stuff is going to be return to form. I just mean like I enjoyed myself in a Marvel movie. Taking out Guardians 3, because I don't want to count that one, just because I feel like that's James Gunn, so you already got a more stacked deck.
That's fair.
Bunch of the previous Marvel content I didn't care for. It was just mediocre to me, and I was very much like, I don't care anymore about the MCU. Like, Kevin Feige's even, hey, you don't have to see everything anymore. Yeah, it's good you said that, because I'm not going to do it. Just don't care.
I canceled my Disney Plus, because I can't be bothered anymore.
It's too bad. I hope this builds word of mouth. I hope, you know, you have the holidays coming up and everything else. I really, really hope that this builds word of mouth. This is the kind of fun family movie I would like to see more people go see, you know? All right. So the stinger, we got to talk about the stinger before we end this, right?
All right. Yeah, we can.
We can? You don't want to, it's the X-Men. You don't want to talk about the X-Men?
I was not impressed by it.
Everyone I know is losing their shit over it. And you're like, I was not impressed. Beast showing up. It's not impressed me.
Okay. So the part that was cool about it, it was a very well formed Beast on screen. However, because it's all CGI and that's fine. It didn't look terrible. And he was being voiced by Kelsey Grammer, which is also very cool. But I'm like, all right, well, that's great. The X-Men are in a different version of the universe.
Well, they're going to tie it into the multiverse again, right?
And that's why I'm annoyed by it.
Yeah, I'm sick of the multiverse.
You know, why does it have to be part of the multiverse? I don't understand why it has to be part of the multiverse. I don't want it to be part of the multiverse. Why don't I just punch my microphone while I'm at it? But it doesn't, like, if they were going to put it in the universe, put it in the greater universe. Don't make it something where we have to bounce through universes.
Well, there's two things. You also have Monica waking up to her mom in an alternate universe, right? So you do have that.
Right.
Then you have the X-Men. And I think it's going to tie into Deadpool 3 for sure, because they're going to run into a lot of Fox properties, and that's going to be in the official Marvel Cinematic Universe. So I think you're going to get some connections there.
So like Deadpool breaks the multiverse and we're all in one universe? If
anybody could, wouldn't it be Deadpool?
I'm not arguing the fact. I'm actually going, hey, okay, that is something that makes sense. One cool thing I can say is that if you've got Monica's mom, who's essentially Captain Marvel in this universe, that also means that there's a chance that we will see a fully powered Rogue in the new universe.
Oh, not like the version that they did for Fox movies?
Yeah, not like the version they did for Fox movies. Because for those who don't know, Rogue got her super strength and flying ability from stealing power from Captain Marvel. And that's how she became the Rogue from the comic books that everyone knows, where she flies. She doesn't do the light beams or anything else like that, because those somehow didn't last, but she got She got Captain Marvel's super strength. She got Captain Marvel's durability, and she got Captain Marvel's ability to fly. So yeah.
And she gets, her mom gets called Binary at the end, right?
Somebody gets called Binary.
I think
at
he
some
calls
point.
Maria, the mom, Binary. But you think that Monica is Binary in the regular world.
Right.
Got it. Interesting. Also, in regards to that ending, I just want to say that Iman Vellani as Miss Marvel is the best thing to happen to the MCU since Rocket Raccoon. I'm going on record. I'm saying for sure she's the best thing since Rocket Raccoon. I think she's an absolute delight. I love her. Every time she's on screen, she makes this movie pop. And seeing her as the new Nick Fury over the Thunderbolts recruiting Kate Bishop at the end has me stoked for that movie in 2025. Absolutely stoked. Well, that's where we're at with the Marvels. I'm very curious to see where we go next. I really think they're retooling Marvel. There's a lot of speculation about retooling the whole Kang storyline. We talked about that in our episode last week. So if you didn't hear it, go back and listen to that episode. We talk about it pretty lengthy. But if $10 is the full price of admission, what do you give the Marvels?
The Marvels is a solid $7.50.
I give it $8. I had a wonderful time. And that's it, guys. We're done now. So remember, the next time you head to a theater to see the Marvels, go to the theater, or, you know, it looks way better than the Hunger Games prequel. Really?
Oh, God. You know what? Go see the Marvels instead of the Hunger Games prequel.
It just doesn't seem look
You good. Know, Gina Carano wants you to go see the Marvels.
Fair point. All right. Take care, guys. Remember, the next time you do that, buy popcorn. Gina Carano, where the fuck did that come from?
There's an article where she's bitching about how they're getting unfair treatment. I'm like, all right, Gina, you're about 10 seconds away from opening up OnlyFans. I don't want to hear it anymore.
I would subscribe. I'm sorry. Was that recorded? Bye.